you know, we got the word queer back from its meaning of, you know, as an insult. I was late teens, early 20s, at the cusp of that, and I finally thought I found a word that represented me. I am, I guess, a little bit more inspired by brave people that not necessarily like cause trouble or anything like that, but just follow their own heart and just are relentless.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Romanians revolt against the government's gender studies ban, Gabon lawmakers move to dump their Euro sodomy ban, and Australia's DJ Sveta beats the odds. All that and more this week, now that you've tuned into This Way Out.
I'm Christopher Gall.
And I'm Lucia Chappell.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending June 27th, 2020. A new law banning gender studies programs in Romania has academics, queer rights groups, and students in revolt. The legislation prohibits educational institutions from spreading theories and opinion on gender identity, according to which gender is a separate concept from biological sex. There was no public debate before the amendment to the education law was approved by Parliament last week. It mimics similar academic restrictions in neighboring Hungary and Poland. A statement issued by the University of Bucharest charged that the new law contradicts fundamental rights guaranteed by the Romanian Constitution and international conventions such as freedom of conscience, freedom of opinion, and university autonomy. Some professors there and at other universities vow to ignore the ban. Soon after the law passed, hundreds demonstrated outside the palace of President Klaus Johannes. Johannes is a politically centrist ethnic German, and he has already hinted that he does not approve of the legislation. Student organizations warned that the law would send Romanian education back to the Middle Ages. They've launched an online petition urging Johannes to veto the measure.
Lawmakers in the lower house of Gabon's parliament voted this week to decriminalize same-gender sex. Approval was hardly overwhelming. 48 members voted yes, 24 no, and 25 abstained. The legislation repeals a provision in the penal code passed just last year that made same-gender sex illegal. That law punishes offenders with up to 6 months in prison and heavy fines. The bill's passage in the Senate is not assured. The ruling Gabonese Democratic Party is in the majority, but it's divided on the issue. One party MP in the lower house who voted against the bill complained that 48 deputies shake an entire nation and its habits and customs. President Ali Bongo Ondimba has not voiced an opinion. However, his wife Sylvia tweeted that Parliament is restoring a fundamental human right for its citizens, that of loving freely without being condemned. Yes to dignity, no to hate. Gabon sits on the Atlantic coast of Central Africa. It's among 33 of 54 countries on the continent that outlaw same-gender sex. 73 countries worldwide do so as well. Most so-called crimes against nature laws are remnants of European colonialism. On the bright side, Human Rights Watch notes that six African countries have overturned their sodomy laws since 2012.
A terrorist knife attack at a park in the southern England city of Reading made headlines this week. In most reports, the sensation of the word terrorism overshadowed the fact that the three men who lost their lives were gay acquaintances. James Furlong, Joe Ritchie Burnett, and David Wales were regulars at the Blagrave Arms, a queer-inclusive community pub. Wales was a scientist. Ritchie Burnett moved from the U.S. to the U.K. 15 years ago and worked at a pharmaceutical company. Furlong was a well-loved history teacher. It's being called a terrorist attack, but officials describe the 25-year-old Libyan refugee in custody as having problems with alcoholism, homelessness, and mental illness. He was arrested almost immediately at the scene. Witnesses told the BBC he had a massive knife and suddenly shouted some unintelligible words and went round a large group trying to stab them. The June 20th attack seems to have been random. queer community leaders praised each victim as proudly gay and an active supporter of equality. More than 100 people gathered outside the Blagrave Arms on June 22nd to place flowers and mourn the trio. A GoFundMe page has been launched to raise money for their funeral costs.
The election of MP Chancey Paik as Speaker of Parliament in Australia's Northern Territory made history this week. He's the first openly gay Indigenous lawmaker to lead any Australian parliament. Paik was chosen after the previous speaker resigned in a corruption scandal. Paik said that his election sends a strong message for our young kids growing up. You have to believe in yourself and know that these are options for you in the future. Indigenous MP Nari Akit rose to fill Paik's former position of deputy speaker. If their Labour Party maintains its majority in territorial elections in August, the unprecedented dynamic First Nation leadership duo could be re-elected to full terms. The new speaker was first elected to Parliament in 2016, despite a smear campaign telling Aboriginal voters not to support Paik because he's gay. He said at the time, "I am eternally proud of who I am and where I come from. I own it and wear it with pride. I am young, I am gay, I am black. I'm a true blue Territorian." Paik began as a queer rights activist and served on the town council where he was born and raised in Alice Springs, the town made famous in the celebrated drag queen movie The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. At 33, he's the youngest currently serving member of Parliament. Paik delivered a speech this week in support of the Black Lives Matter movement. He decried systemic racism in government, saying, "This must change, and that is what continues to motivate me. We need to do better."
U.S. LGBTQ advocacy groups are slamming the Trump administration with another lawsuit, this one involving the planned rollback of health care protections for transgender people. The Health and Human Services Department announced the policy change 2 days before the June 15th Supreme Court queer employment rights ruling. The agency has confirmed that it still intends to eliminate the anti-trans discrimination protections instituted by the Obama administration under the Affordable Care Act. Trump's side wants a religious exemption that would permit any healthcare provider to claim that their faith forbids them from treating transgender patients. They would also remove bias bans based on sexual orientation and in reproductive care. Lambda Legal filed suit on June 22nd on behalf of a number of queer advocacy organizations. It charges the Trump administration with revising the rules with next to no legal, medical, or reasoned policy foundation, and contrary to the opinions of professional medical and public health organizations. It also cites the latest Supreme Court ruling that federal civil rights laws banning bias based on sex extend to sexual orientation and gender identity. A survey published this week by the Kaiser Family Foundation found an amazing 9 in 10 respondents in the U.S. expressing support for the High Court employment rights decision. A similarly large majority also said it should be illegal for healthcare providers to refuse to treat LGBTQ people. Meanwhile, the Justice Department submitted a filing to the Supreme Court on June 25th asking for the total invalidation of the Affordable Care Act.
Finally, former San Francisco supervisor Harry Britt died in the city on June 24th. He was 82 and had been in declining health. Britt was appointed by then-San Francisco Mayor Dianne Feinstein after the November 1978 assassination of Harvey Milk. Britt grew up in Port Arthur, Texas, and followed the straight and narrow for a while. He got married in 1960 and became a Methodist minister, shepherding two congregations in Chicago. His marriage and his ministry both fell victim to the turbulent 1960s. Britt moved to San Francisco in 1972, where he finally came out and wound up becoming a protege of budding politician Harvey Milk. Milk named him as one of four acceptable candidates to replace him in an eerily prescient audio tape recorded before he was killed. Now Senator Feinstein and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi were among those offering tributes to Britt. He was hailed as a progressive trailblazer in his own right, including 14 years of service on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Longtime friend and former California Assemblymember Tom Ambiano told the Bay Area Reporter that if you look up unsung hero in the dictionary, you'll see a picture of Harry. In May 1979, former cop and supervisor Dan White infamously received a light sentence for assassinating Milk. Protesting queers and their allies were brutally assaulted by police officers outside San Francisco City Hall.
It has now broken loose. Cops are now bashing heads. The people who had been protecting City Hall are now getting dragged away by police.
Cops then converged on the heavily LGBT Castro district with billy clubs swinging.
They came in tipping tables over, billy clubbing, trampling over people, saying, "Get the hell out."
Harry Britt spoke to thousands of people the night after the White Night riots at a previously planned birthday celebration for Harvey Milk. His words could almost have been spoken yesterday.
Tonight, 15,000 people have gathered to demonstrate with their love that the spirit of Harvey Milk will always be alive in our city. And I sure as hell don't have to tell you that Harvey Milk's people do not have a damn thing to apologize to anybody for ever. Let no one believe that the step that we have taken is a step from nonviolence to violence. We have suffered too much at the hands of violent people ever to go down that road. But let us say with our new strength that we are tired of dealing with pigs, and that from now on, the people who would follow the spirit of Dan White are going to have to deal with us.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending June 27th, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is usually recorded in the studios of KPFK Los Angeles, but we're recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency. The news is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to News Wrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappelle. Stay healthy.
And I'm Christopher Gall. Stay safe.
I guess on radio, I was a bit of a dance music pioneer. I think I became sort of an accidental activist.
Where is the club scene going after COVID-19? The future is blurry, but the beat goes on for Australia's DJ Sveta. We first met Sveta a couple of This Way Outs ago when she told our Sydney correspondent William Broom about her childhood flight from the Soviet Union and how that experience informed her activism and her art. As the conversation continues, William and Sveta talk about coping during the current crisis, her inspirations, and her aspirations.
In Sydney, we know you as a DJ at major events such as Sleazeball and the Sydney Gay and Lesbian Mardi Gras Party. You've very much been a fixture of the Sydney LGBTIQ music scene for some time. How have you been coping and adapting during COVID?
We've had to go through so many different things here, especially in Sydney, in New South Wales, where we had lockout laws. So it's been tough, you know, like we've lost 100% of our work. You know, I've been in lots of tough situations before for my entire life and doing my best to keep the insecurity off my social media, because I think sometimes when you express a lot of grief or feel vulnerable, and people see that, even people who have been around a long time have a feeling that way, you know, it adds to the collective grief. So I've just been a bit real, but yeah, it's tough because I really, like everyone else in this field of all events, we don't really know what the future is.
A lot of performers in Sydney and around Australia, around the world for that matter, have been doing shows online. Have you been doing that at all?
Yeah, I've done a few. I did a House of Mints live stream, which is a very cool sort of underground brand here in Sydney. I guess you could say it's like one of the coolest ones. I was on a show with Mike Q, New York's Mike Q, who did one from New York right after me. I also did one with Puffdorf, a really big brand from Melbourne. I'm their music director in Sydney. So last November, we launched Puffdorf Sydney at one of the biggest venues in Australia. essentially brought Sydney back to life after lockouts were lifted. So I did that with Sneaky Sam. And then just as we built it up, Rome burns. So that went really well. We had Sneaky Sound System as a guest concert on there. And I think we attracted like 30,000 viewers.
Impressive.
And then one of the closest ones to my heart, we did one with a Sydney brand called Control, which is a female-focused techno brand that my partner runs. It's very important to support and be part of broadcasts that maybe don't have the more mainstream focus, but are definitely, there's a lot of hard work behind it, providing access and just really great entertainment from women and women-identified artists and our male friends. We had my friend George, who's my only other Russian friend in Australia. He did a guest set.
As a DJ and an activist, who have been your major inspiration and mentors?
I was just like getting my own information in the early days of picking up the Sydney Star Observer and sort of getting very interested about LGBTQI stuff. And I didn't 100% understand why at the time, because I thought I identified as heterosexual up until I was like 20, 21. But I knew that I didn't sit neatly into that. You have to remember there was no internet for most of my childhood. You know, the only things that I was exposed to was what you would find in a library or a porn magazine that you might find in the garbage somewhere on the street. And I remember at the age of 9 or 10, I found a gay male porn magazine and I didn't really understand what was happening in there, but I got really turned on by it. And I was just like, I don't understand what's happening. This is like before there were transgender issues, really. I saw anything written about it. I'm like, maybe I'm a man stuck inside a woman's body who wants to be with a man. And when I was sort of maturing and, you know, we got the word queer back from its meaning of, you know, as an insult, I was late teens, early 20s, the cusp of that. And I finally thought I found a word that represented me, you know, don't fit neatly into anything. So I was just really inspired by all the exciting young activists out there. But I think as I got older, I met people like Ken Davis, who was one of the original 78ers, and he was a family friend of one of my exes.
Ken Davis, as a 78er, was at that first Mardi Gras in Sydney in 1978.
I spent a lot of time with Ken, many years, Christmases, lots of special occasions, and I just really admired the fact he got so much done. Like, you know, he fought for LGBT people and trade unions, all kinds of stuff. Like, he didn't gloat about this. I would just do my own research. I am, I guess, a little bit more inspired by brave people that not necessarily like cause trouble or anything like that, but just follow their own heart and just are relentless.
Getting back to your DJing, where are your favourite places to perform?
I guess I've had an extraordinarily interesting and lucky career in that I first broke in the gay male community of the what's the abbreviation? The sex positive, you know, the leather parties and stuff. I was just so happy that I got found by that community, that they identified with that sound, you know, very early on, because I felt very comfortable there. And then, you know, I got discovered by the Sydney Hellfire Club, and that ended up being a 24-year residency. It just finished up last year. I didn't sort of set out to become a DJ. DJing found me, because when I was telling you that I was one of the early people playing dance music, the benefit of being community radio around that time is for like 6 of those years, I had people ringing up asking where they could hear me DJ. So I never set out to become a pop star or a god or anything like that. My passion was always, that's all I did. And, you know, when I was young and in my teens, I didn't have any friends because of the bullying. So I love David Bowie. Like, I love all music. Like, I genuinely love all music. And sort of being adopted into, you know, the 40 different subsections of the LGBT community, but also, you know, mainstream communities, fashion community, where I get to a music brief and get to create soundscapes. So I just feel like, you know, all the different areas of my passion for music are quite satisfied.
You've performed sets alongside people like Boy George and the Scissor Sisters. Who have been your favourite people to share sets with?
Again, I've had extraordinary luck. I was obsessed with Boy George as a teenager. Like, when I found out he was gay when I was 1984, when I was 12, I burst out crying. I wanted to marry him. Do you really want to make me cry? You know, like, I now look back at it and I realize what else I was obsessed with. I enjoyed, you know, the not clear picture of whether he was a boy or a girl, or you know, same with my obsession with David Bowie. So the first time you get to perform with someone like that, you really just kind of have to stop and connect with the 12-year-old.
Of course.
So there's all these different experiences. There's so many highlights, and I'm not saying this in a bragging way. I'm saying this as a music lover. First time I played with the presets here in Australia, and I didn't know that they knew who I was, and they came up to me and like bowed to me and said, you know, you're a legend. And so that's the other extraordinary thing about having a very long-term career is you don't like to have people that you admire say lovely things back. So, you know, not everyone is super nice, but it still feels nice to be playing alongside those people.
More with Australia's legendary DJ Sveta after this.
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, producer of This Way Out's Global Queer Read-In, a virtual Pride event that happened Thursday, June 25th online. We thank the 32-plus participants who read LGBTQ literature and poetry to us. To view the readings, visit This Way Out Radio on YouTube.
I'm Alfre Woodard. I'm reading for This Way Out's Global Queer Read-In. I'm reading James Baldwin, The Fire Next Time.
And now back to William Broom's conversation with DJ Sveta.
Have you, as a female DJ, experienced much misogyny within our community?
Ironically, I really didn't for the very longest time because the more sex positive, sort of leathery or, you know, underground male community was the first to find me. I guess I've had really great networks, and I've played at gay male saunas and men only venues for around the world, like for many, many years. But I was kind of shocked a couple of years ago when I lost several bookings after being booked to play one time in Melbourne, another time by promoters who've booked me, but then the venue, which is male only, has decided on behalf of their patrons that my presence will be like off-putting to them, and these are like much older gay men. And I must say that moment really broke my heart because, you know, having sort of done so much volunteer work, especially in the early days of HIV/AIDS, it's really not what you expect to hear, that someone might be turned off by you because of your gender. Even if we're going to say as basic as appearance, it's not like I wear high heels and I'm not there like masturbating while I'm while I'm playing. But yes, I've also, of course, experienced a lot of misogyny in the mainstream. But every woman experiences misogyny in their life. There's just, you know, I can tell you my Me Toos, not necessarily sexual Me Toos, but career-ending Me Toos, because someone at the top of someone else in the straight world didn't think that I looked as good as someone else who might represent their festival, you know, look as a girl. Whereas I've never actually received one iota of misogyny from an audience member ever.
Wow.
Never. So I think a lot of that stuff really is festering at the top levels, where they think that they are representing their audience that they certainly don't know very well. Because if you are engaged with your music, if you really care about it, if you're passionate, and people can see that when you're playing, and people really don't care if you're a little bit larger, like I've been larger in my past, or smaller, they don't have a problem with that. That's definitely something that it gets placed at the top.
we come out of COVID, what do you think the future holds for clubs here in Sydney and elsewhere?
Ah, that's a million-dollar question. I'm looking at ads in my Facebook saying venues that I'm, you know, I was a resident at for years on a particular night are opening, and we're not, they don't have dancing at the moment, but they're going to have a drag show. Like, no one really knows what is happening. Like, no one knows whether there's going to be a vaccine where we can feel comfortable in doing whatever it is. I think there's going to be a lot of job insecurity. It's so hard to say. I hope I get to play music to an audience, and I hope that audience gets to go again into a bar and not worry about being socially distant, or not worry about having too many drinks and making out, you know, in a heated passion in the corner. That spontaneity, I hope to see that come back. That's one of my favorite things when I'm playing. I sometimes see people like that in the corner, you know, and I really like the way that I play music is spontaneously. I never plan my sets, and I, you know, tune into what's happening to me. And sometimes I can feel music so deeply. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to read music, but I feel music and what it can do. So sometimes I actually create more heated vibes with the music just to kind of entertain myself. I can always get that couple to get more cozy. I want
beautiful.
That.
Which brings me on to my final question. What does the future hold for you?
You've just tapped a very sore...
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I mean, look, it's for everyone, really, isn't it? It's hard because it's, you know, I've done a lot of things in my life. I've also had, you know, day jobs in the past while I've been full-time DJing. But it's so hard to know because there's going to be so many fewer jobs around. And I've just spent so much of my life pursuing, you know, passionately things that I'd like to do, even, you know, with day jobs. It's been sort of arts marketing at the Opera House, you know, which was decimated by the Tony Abbott government. I would like to have some self-esteem. It's not about sort of, oh, I need to be famous. If this is decimated, I hope something like finds me that knows that I'm capable of doing a whole lot of different things. And it's not about the jobs being fun. It's just I don't want to be doing something that's just not contributing in a way that I know to the world that I can contribute. Yeah.
DJ Sveta, thanks so much for talking to us here on This Way Out.
My absolute pleasure. And I just want to send a big hello to all the listeners out there in my second home in the US.
This is William Broom in Sydney, Australia for This Way Out.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Christopher Gall and Alicia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from William Broom. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors James Kennedy and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappelle and the entire This Way Out crew, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KDUR Durango, Colorado, CHSR Fredericton, New Brunswick, WEFT Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, and a wide array of community, terrestrial, and internet radio stations around the world, including this one.
I'm Donald Trump, and I approve this message.
Stay healthy and stay tuned.